Berylum Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. Hello again, and welcome to Verulam Sport Podcasting. And I've got to tell you, I am really excited tonight. We're very fortunate we get to speak to the great and the good from around the world of sport. But one of the true legends, one of the men that we really appreciate speaking to, is the voice of the old Albanians and a true scholar of the great game of rugby union. It's a privilege to welcome back to the show, friend of the show, Mr. Brian Quinn. Good evening, Brian. How are you?
Good evening, Tony. I'm great. I just hope I live up to that build-up. Thanks very much.
Hey, you do each and every single time. You never fail to impress. Brian, so much to unpack. It's been a strange year, hasn't it? We'll talk about that from an NOA's perspective towards the end of this conversation. But just before we get into down and dirty with the world of rugby union from the elite level, a few weeks ago, I'm sure many listeners will have heard a brilliant podcast, if I do say so myself, featuring and drilling into our favourite sporting commentators. I had to give my shout out to the man, the legend, now dearly departed, Mr. Bill McLaren, the voice of rugby and always will be for me. Bill's best bits was kind of the theme tune and kind of the thrust of my early life. I've got to tell you that great VHS. But Brian, just quickly, give us a few of your memories or your thoughts on, for my money, the greatest sporting commentator of all time, the voice of rugby, Mr. Bill McLaren.
Well, it's intriguing to think about him because there are so many rugby moments which were absolute legend, and he was right there telling us all about them. They do say that when you are a television commentator, and in fact every producer will tell you this, that you can only commentate on what you see on the monitor that's in front of you, which is the same size of the screen you're looking at now, Tony. It's impossible to over-exaggerate the fact that Mr. McLaren would drag you into the stadium kicking and screaming, even if you were lying on your sofa at home. He would make you feel there by his gestures, his plain enthusiasm for the game. And so many, many times looking at Twickenham, looking at the Arms Park, looking at Ellis Park, all sorts of places around the world where rugby is played. And he made the situation, he made the day far better just by being there and being what he was, which was a servant of the game. He always believed he was that. Mm-hmm. And being such a wonderful exponent of it.
Yeah, absolutely. For my money, the greatest sports commentator all time and forever and a day will be the voice of rugby. Brian, have you ever been dancing in the streets of St. Albans?
Yes, I have. Excellent. I didn't know you'd filmed that, Tony.
I mean, listen, I could go on and on. So many great memories of the great man, as I say. Do check out that podcast. You can find it on the award-winning Radio Verulam website. Very easy. Just check out the podcast tabs where all the Radio Verulam sports podcasts live. That one in question is our take on all-time greatest commentators. But I tell you what, there's a whole heap of other excellent output and content. Something for everybody in the world of the Verulam, Radio Verulam podcast. Do check that tab out. Brian, again, so much rugby. I can't wait to get a bit of a inside skinny onto the OA situation in this surreal year. We'll do that in a bit. But just want to bring it to the elite at the domestic level. Exeter, potentially looking to claim their first Gallagher Premiership title, but they've already got one bit of silverware in the cabinet. Great exponent for the game of rugby as they prevailed in a real fascinating contest against Racing 92, who, of course, knocked Saracens out at the semi-final stage in the Heineken Champions Cup. Exeter, with Sam Simmons, England star, named European Player of the Season, were the standout team And I think one has to give credit to Exeter for how they run, how they continue to run, and their successes on the park against an excellent Racing side. Your thoughts on that game?
The result, I have to say, I was delighted with the result. Racing are a wonderful side, and over the years they have contained so many heroes of mine. Two noted fly halves in particular, one from the other side of the world and one from England. But more about that, I guess, in another show. It was something that I can't get over the fact that a very few years ago, Exeter were at level four, which is where the old Albanians are now.
Absolutely.
And they are now champions of Europe, likely, and for my money, certainly are the champions of this domestic game as well. All credit to them for everything that they've done. They're brilliantly managed. The squad is superbly picked and brilliantly trained, as you would expect from top professionals, and more power to them.
Yeah, absolutely. They have been quite outspoken in their criticisms of Saracens, and we're kind of finally drawing a line under Pandora's box, which is Saracens' season this campaign domestically.
But unless you happen to be the Daily Mail, who are not drawing a line under it.
My mama used to say to me, Mr. Quinn, if you ain't got nothing good to say, say nothing. So
I fully agree with your mama, Tony.
I'll take it a wise words on that one. But the point of the matter is this, setting that antipathy into a different bubble and just putting it into its pure rugby context. Got so much admiration for Baxter and the head honcho, but equivalent to Saracens, the thing that most impresses me, Brian, and I think this is the lesson to all modern rugby clubs, is particularly in this salary cap era, not exclusively, but largely homegrown talent, whether that's come from their core area or certainly within their kind of, you know, network of contacts within the UK, is astonishing. Don't get me wrong, they've got some global stars, as every team does, particularly if you want to be competing at European elite level. But again, that model is something that I think so many teams need to appreciate. And I think they're the only team that can look Saracens in the eye for doing that so exceptionally well. And it's funny, isn't it? Two most successful teams in the last decade are Saracens and now Exeter.
You know, two teams, two clubs doing exactly the same thing with slightly different details there.
Yeah.
Saracens created a family. They now have to rebuild in all sorts of ways for various reasons. Exeter created a similar family. Every time our club, the old Albanians, goes to the West Country, the clubs we meet, our opposition, I've never heard a bad word said about anybody or anything to do with Exeter. They all want to play a part in it. They want to lend players. They want to help training. They want to receive the Exeter stars in their own clubs to help out with the things that each of those clubs wishes to do. Now, you can't speak higher praise of a professional organization than another, albeit semi-professional organization, wants to emulate what they have done. And it's fantastic. And it's right across the West Country.
But again, that model is kind of the beacon, isn't it, for all teams at this kind of level. As I say, their rise to this stratospheric levels is both rapid but immensely well managed. It seemed to me that there was always a plan, always an end goal, and it was done in a controlled fashion, as opposed to maybe you see in other sports, people throwing money and hoping that's going to be the answer to all of our prayers. So their way
they had a plan themselves. And they operated the plan, Tony.
Execution is the key, as they say. Anyway, swiftly moving things on, so much to discuss, Brian. Been really impressed with the action down under in the recent Bledisloe Cup affairs. I mean, goodness me, a few weekends ago, it was as tense and as tight as you like. Finished 16 all in a wonderful game of rugby. And were it not for a lick of paint, Australia Reece Hodge had a penalty from fully 55 odd yards out. Glance across the uprights, it would have been an Australia victory. That was a great result. But New Zealand, they're practically unbeatable, aren't they, at Ellis Park? You have to go back, goodness me, to... Australia themselves haven't won at Ellis Park since 86, and their record there is immense. They won, of course, at the weekend, 27-7, but another great game. I was impressed with Australia. They left points on the park. There was only one winner, I think, in the final analysis, but two barnstorming games of international rugby.
Yep, couldn't agree more. The difference for me between the two sides was speed of handling
Yeah.
If Australia had let the ball go just a fraction quicker, then they've got speed on either side of the field and from the back. They've also got an absolutely firecracker of a scrum half. And I really want to look at more of what he does in the future. Although if I was had a team playing against him, perhaps not quite so closely as I might wish. Absolutely wonderful exponent of the art of the nine. New Zealand, as you say, almost unbeatable at their home of rugby. However, they were asked all the questions that can be asked by an Australian side. Remember, the union is in so much trouble, and to have all these guys in the squad put out what they did against the best in the world was fantastic. And I think it's just the speed of the last pass which undid Australia, and they will learn from that, and they will be tremendously dangerous opponents in the coming months and years.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch out for them. Aaron Smith, the fabulous New Zealand scrum half, again scored in the fixture of the 16-all affair and had an immense duel with his Aussie opposite number. From the Aussie side, got to give massive respect to young man still in Hooper, who's in that first fixture, the epic 16-all draw, clocked up a century of test matches. And he is... in almost a modern mould, an old school number seven, which I like to see. A real whippersnapper, and he gets around the park, makes a nuisance of himself. Just quickly, your thoughts on the Aussie skipper.
As you say, old-fashioned. Australia seem to have been producing these people forever. And Hooper is old-fashioned. You don't want to be hit by him. He's got a hit like an express train. He wanders all over the park doing exactly that, and he's the quickest to ground in many, many ways, which is so much of the modern game. Difficult to play against, and New Zealand found it so. It took every effort that they had to contain him.
We have become accustomed, and we're missing it massively, Brian, to the famed Brian Quinn precisionometer. And I got to say, I know there were errors across both test matches, but for my money, with two test matches played at such intensity, the precision on display from both sides was really high. For you, though, you are the precision maestro. What would you rate both test matches from a precision execution perspective?
Well, let's take it with the forwards. The speed of things at, say, the line-out, absolutely amazing, and I would say both sides. There were mistakes made, and the opposition in either case really took advantage of that. If the ball is loose at the lineup for any particular reason, the opposition on both sides on each of those test matches did wonderfully well in taking advantage of that. So precision, right the way across the field, it would be churlish to put an actual figure on it, but it's of a very high degree, and we can all learn from that. England will certainly look at that, and they will learn lessons from it, certainly with the new boys coming into what seems to be the England setup.
Absolutely. And we'll build up to that in just a second. Brian, last time I was lucky to enjoy your company, we were talking about our all-time favourite 15s rugby union all-time, which doesn't feature in the top tier or the top six of the international arena. And a lot of Georgians made the cut. Tell you what, I'm excited for the International, the Nations Cup tournament kicking off a bit later, but they're in action this weekend against Scotland. And I tell you, my goodness me, Georgia, ranked number 12 at the moment in the IRB listings, have come on leaps and bounds, for instance, since England smashed them in the 03 Rugby World Cup, 84-6. They're going to pose some quite unique challenges to the Scots, I think, this weekend.
Yes, they are. They're not the wooden spoon holders that we have assumed them to be for so long in England. They are very dangerous opponents, and Georgia will find that out in very specific terms.
That game is Friday. Looking forward to it. And I'm looking, again, forward to next week to preview to what they're dubbing Super Saturday, with the final weekend of a very weird Six Nations this year round. But Brian, your Ireland in action in Six Nations activity on this coming Saturday, the 24th, playing against Italy, the only two teams still on only three matches. Ireland's record at the moment, played 3, won 2, lost 1. Now, we're talking Georgia's improvements. They're actually ranked higher than Italy, aren't they? Who are down in 14th.
Yes, sir.
Italy haven't won a Six Nations match since Murrayfield 2015, when they narrowly edged out the Scots by 22-19. Ireland will be massive favourites in this one, and it can't be doing the Italian rugby culture much good to go through this consistent flow of defeats.
Sorry, Tony, you'll have to repeat that. I'm having trouble here.
Yeah, okay, sorry, Brian, no issues. I was just saying, Ireland, Italy at the weekend. Italy without a Six Nations win since 2015, a run of 22 matches. Ireland, of course, will be favourites going in. But I was asking you, Brian, it can't be surely doing the Italian rugby culture much good to have this consistent run of defeats, where, quite frankly, they haven't really been at the races either. Are we really now having to wake up to a need for a two-tier Six Nations tournament?
Well, wouldn't that make sense? Doesn't the idea of promotion and relegation really crystallize the mind in any player, indeed in any coach? And
indeed,
it certainly does exactly the same thing for every spectator. I would love to see it. It would drag more people kicking and screaming into the what is now the Six Nations. No problem at all with six being in the first division of the Six Nations, if you will, but let's have another six in a second division. I don't know whether you could fill six at that rank in a tier two. You could certainly have four, and I would like to see countries like Spain, Germany, really enthused with what is possible, because it's the art of the possible. If a door seems absolutely closed and like you're operating a siege against a castle, is it possible to undermine the castle? Is it possible to get in through the door? You don't know until you try. If it proves for years and years and years that it's impossible, then your own troops start to suffer and people lose morale. I'd rather the morale of players, spectators, and of course management was kept up, and certainly funders, because these are hugely important in the current game.
Ireland's ex-head honcho, Schmitz, has got an exciting role in the development of the IRB game now. I'm sure he'll do a great role there. And it was a golden era for your Irish under his stewardship. Obviously, sadly, kind of almost peaked too soon for the Rugby World Cup. But, you know, that famous victory over New Zealand and lots of titles, Grand Slams, Triple Crowns under his tenure. A famous rugby name is obviously currently head honcho, Andy Farrell. What have you made of his early sojourn in the role?
Farrell is a great manager. He has the loyalty of every team that he has played in or managed, and that is over the two codes, league and, of course, union. So Ireland have a tremendous advantage there, which... for my money, England should still have. But hey, that's just me talking.
Another big fixture this weekend. They that one. Go on.
Will go ahead with all confidence. they will go ahead with all confidence against opposition for the remainder of this rather fractured year, and then look to build on that for the next year. But Farrell, it's difficult to pick somebody in this situation. Who would be better at grabbing all the pieces together and saying, well, okay, we've had the nasty things happen. Let's get on with what we do best, which is to play rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are good times ahead for Ireland as they look to build again with a new generation. Maybe the standout fixture this weekend, Brian, I'm looking forward to this one. Not a Six Nations affair this time round, but a bit of a warm-up for what they're calling Super Saturday next weekend. France-Wales. And we're talking new management there. Been impressed with a combination of the cerebral Galtier, great scrum half, fly half in his day, scrum half really, alongside, of course, another man who maybe England have let slip through their coaching infrastructure. A man who did great things at Wales. I'm talking, of course, Sean Edwards, adding the grit. And France have impressed, currently lying in second in the Six Nations. So, yeah, it's exciting times. I think that could well be a compelling and, I think, very evenly contested affair. France versus Wales this Saturday. Your thoughts, Mr. Quinn?
I don't know whether I'd like to be Mr. Edwards in this one, but we know what Edwards can bring to a defence in all sorts of ways. Now, can you imagine a French side with all the genius that they've played with? I know this is perhaps an old-fashioned view, but we used to say we don't know which French side is turning up. Can you imagine the panache that they played with when they have the confidence of a defensive system, a setup which is not going to break, when you know that even if your opponents have the ball, they are not going to get through you because that nice Mr. Edwards has taught you the ways to stop them doing it. Now, this is hugely dangerous for Wales, hugely dangerous. I think Wales are in a position of not quite sure which way we're going at the moment, lads. And they let Edwards go, which is almost a monstrous thing to do with so much time behind him in the Principality. So I think France are going to be, to say the least, quietly confident of this meeting.
Definitely agree with you there. As you say, I think they've got the nucleus of a great, great team. They've always had the talent and the steel now being provided by Edwards alongside a man who is kind of almost the embodiment of the elan and mercurial quality of the French in Galtier. I think they've got a real nice cocktail there. Be fascinating to see how they develop. Final point on Wales, though. Theme of tonight's conversation has been the importance of management and the difficulty in transitioning a new management team. Again, obviously, we've referenced Edwards now involved with the French. Of course, Gatland is still going to oversee next year's Lions tour, God willing. But Wayne Pivot coming in, Wales have been a little bit underwhelming for me. Is this our island, but maybe slightly amplified, just the difficulties of a transition, since they've also gone through what the media certainly would love us to believe, a quote-unquote golden generation?
Well, I'm not sure if this is relevant, but I'll try it. Apparently, a Chinese word for catastrophe is the same word for opportunity. Mm-hmm. Now, Wales have not had a catastrophe, but they've got lots of differences, lots of changes, and this must be borne. Now, if they look upon it as a clear opportunity, then anything is possible for Wales because they have a certain mercurial element, as France always did, which perhaps was lacking in the other three home nations. It's a matter of suck it and see. They would have done the same training which they would have done, and Wales have led the field in training, fitness training, that is, for years and years. It remains to be seen whether the play across the field, whether they are absolutely confident in everything they do, whether they're strong enough in the tight forwards to see whether they can build it. I do wish them luck because obviously they're on the same island as we are, but we will see.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to France, Wales on Saturday. Now, Sunday, again, it's a bit of a warm-up, but England face the Barbarians. Before we get into this one, Brian, refresh my memory. As I say, last time I had the pleasure of pontificating vis-a-vis rugby with your good self, you in that very same aforementioned conversation about our favourite all-time overseas stars in a non-top-tier context, you gave us a name of a local lad who represented the Barbars and had one of the great rugby tales. Refresh my memory of his name and a little bit of his story. The friend of another Rugby England icon in Mr. Ben Clark.
Yes, he was indeed a friend. The man concerned, Colin Johnson, CJ, a famous son of Bishop Stortford, played for 25 years in the Stortford back row, second row, and a real forward in the old school who developed his game. I'm not quite sure exactly when he retired from playing, but it was some little while ago. Very welcome in every club, so long as you weren't on the field playing with the ball that he wanted. He was in the scrum, which was coached by Ben Clark's father. And I'm sorry, that's not true. He was in the scrum that was there with Ben Clark's father. And Ben Clark, one year, was asked by the management of the Barbarians, would he play in the Mobs Memorial match? And he said, yes, delighted to do that, so long as CJ plays. And they said, great, okay, what's a CJ?
Love it.
And he said, well, it's a mate of mine from Bishop Stortford. And they said, well, that's great, Ben. That's very, very nice. Does he actually play rugby? He said, oh, yes, yes. He's He's played rugby for ever such a long time. Well, how old is this man? He's somewhere in his 40s, said Ben. And you'll play if he plays alongside you. Yes, I will. Right. Okay. So they did that, and they sent out an invitation to CJ. CJ read this thing when he opened it, when it dropped onto his mat. And he, of course, regarded it as a joke. He thought one of his friends was playing silly with him. But he opened it up, and once he investigated, it became obvious to him that it was absolutely true, and he had been selected for the Barbarians and was going to play at Welford Road.
Yep.
He trained for an entire month all on his own and with his friends, with all the enthusiasm they could muster. And on the day, the Barbarians were absolutely mullered by their opposition, which was a shame. But it wasn't entirely a shame, because there was a little heap of Bishop Stortford supporters up in the gods. And the first person to score a try was, of course, CJ. And that was quite enough.
It's such a wonderful rugby fable. It really is marvellous, and made all the more beautiful because it's true, Brian. I tell you what, I love that.
Yes, it's absolutely true. And being the man, a couple of weeks later, he was back playing. I remember seeing him a couple of weeks later. He was back playing for the Stortford side against OVs. I was in the crowd that day watching that. And
sorry, just slightly lost you there, Brian. Are you still there?
Stortford were brought down to earth that day, but are you? Yeah, still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, coming through clear now, mate. That's absolutely grand. Right. Well, I mean, honestly, I just love it, Brian. It's one of the great tales. But also, I mean, that's going back a few years now. And I know that the Boxing Day fixture between the Barbars and the Tigers used to be a real keenly looked forward to fixture. Now that's gone by the wayside. I'm glad the Barbars at the moment haven't gone by the wayside, Brian. They do have a unique rugby philosophy. But I just wonder, in this hyper era of professionalism, are we seeing the final days of this wonderful kind of rugby team? I can't think of a better way of explaining it. So what are your thoughts on the present and the future of the Barbars?
There is always room for tradition, and sometimes tradition is the only thing that you have to lean on. It was once said by an industrialist that history is bunk, but the simple thing about history is, if you don't know where you've been, you don't know. Still dealing with professional rugby players these days who lend their services in the very best of ways to the Barbarians. And I think it's certainly to be said that there's no lack of volunteers. Anybody who is selected for the Barbarians of any level will regard it as an honor and will continue to do so. So no, I do not think that we can kiss goodbye to exactly that sort of thing. Is it relevant in the modern terms? I think a celebration is always relevant. And I think that holds good in any sport, certainly in rugby, which is very, very much a contact sport in the way that we want it. So no, I don't think it's dead, no more than the Lions are dead. I do wish that people would stop messing with the Lions. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm into tricky territory here, because you're dealing with the investment side of Premiership clubs who obviously want to protect their investments, and I understand that. But could they not find a hole for some time, a couple of weeks in the year, once every 4 years, to let this sort of thing develop? It means so much to the morale of the game and everybody concerned with it. So I'd love to see that.
You and I both massive fans of both the tradition of the Lions and indeed the Barbarians, and delighted that there is still space for both of these aspects of rugby's great heritage, and that it still remains relevant in our modern hyper-professional world. That being said, though, Brian, you can't much see past a very dominant England on Sunday against the Barbars, which, in case people aren't aware, they're essentially, at the most basic level, a scratch team made up of players from all around the world, invitation only. Obviously, they've got very limited time to train with one another, understand lineup calls. Their overall philosophy has always been kind of play the ball quite openly. So they're always fun. But with all that being said, just the context, you can't but see anything other than a fairly substantial England victory on Sunday. Or is there still hope in our world for an upset?
No, not if you're a barbarian this time out. I'm afraid the barbarians have no chance at all because England have a secret weapon. And the secret weapon, of course, it's in two parts. One is Mauro Itoje, that well-known lock forward from Saracens. The other one, also from Saracens, is a certain Ali Crossdale, who's uncapped so far. The reason why it's a secret weapon is both of these men wore old Albanian colours. And there you go. England are strengthened by two OAs. And for that reason, the barbarians have no chance whatsoever. With my tongue in my cheek, I have to say.
I absolutely love that because that provides a genius segue into our nice next final bit of tonight's conversation, where we are going to talk about the OAs. And again, let's not forget that it's fair to call the OAs, Old Albanians, the kind of jewel in the crown of Hertfordshire rugby, obviously Saracens notwithstanding. But your relationship with Saracens is so phenomenal. The facilities at Wollams Park, where, of course, Saracens operate from a training context, is outstanding. And, you know, again, always appreciate putting people in the picture of the OAs. Just before we get a picture of where we're at now in our weird 2020, I love that you brought that up, the two OAs ex-boys there in this England context. I remember a time, Brian, where I think there were seven ex-OAs on either the first team or on the bench for an England game. Just shows you, doesn't it, as you appreciate how strong of a feeder club that you are and your role in England's successes.
we love to claim the credit wherever we possibly can. I certainly can't, because like Churchill, I'm only there to provide the roar. There are other people, probably a great deal older even than me, who will say, "No, I'm sure it was us that did it. It was our traditions that brought these young men through. And we'll see England against all opposition." And they'll say things like that. But hey, that's probably for another day, and we've got to do that with a cold one as opposed to sitting on the
screen. Listen, Brian, I'm already looking forward to that, I'm telling you, and I can well hear those type of voices ringing in my ear. I think, alas, we know the type. But there we go. The core of that, though, tongue-in-cheekedly as it was, Brian, is that the OAs are at the core of the great world of rugby union here in Hertfordshire. I know I had the very great privilege to speak briefly a little while back with head coach Dan George. Can you just give us a little bit of a context? Obviously, we're respectful of, as we must be, of the global situation. No fixtures at the moment. What's the latest? Is training still going on? And what are the expectations at this strange time for future rugby?
Easily answered. Training is indeed going on, at least on the field. Dan George, hugely popular, hugely experienced in all sorts of ways. And even without a fixture list, he does have the dressing room, and I'm delighted to report that. We have a lot of young men, a lot of new young men as well, who have joined and have set their store down by the old Albanians, and we could have no better coach to lead that forward. With regard to fixtures, we are told that the next possibility is January. I will make no comment about that because I cannot predict the future. I hope it is. I'd love to see it. And every rugby aficionado in the whole of the world would love to see that.
Absolutely.
I cannot predict it at the moment. Bear in mind, obviously, that with professional clubs, fully professional clubs, they're tested time after time every week. And even then, it doesn't work 100%. If you look at the sad thing which may happen to Wasps now, the sad thing which did happen to Sale. And one can never be so careful, even though these are fit young people, males, females, etc. You cannot be too careful in what's going on in the world these days. So I don't know. January, we hope, and we will stick with that hope until told otherwise.
Brian, likewise, we live in hope. And do me a favour from both myself personally and the whole team at Verum Sport, would like to send our best wishes to Dan and, of course, the whole community there at Old Albanians. We always
thank you, Tony.
Appreciate...
I will certainly do that.
Really appreciate that. That's fabulous. Well, what can I tell you, Brian? You have eminently lived up to your big billing, as you always do, never fail to impress. I've thoroughly enjoyed your company again, and we'll look forward to unpacking this weekend's actions and building up to Super Six. It's being called a Super Saturday next weekend in the final round of this year's protracted Six Nations. I look forward to chatting to you next week, but for tonight, salute you as always. Have a good evening. Thanks again.
It was a pleasure, Tony. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.